morning. Welcome to day three for the West Courtroom. Today we're Judge Owen and I are honored to have Judge Morgan from the District Court across the plaza to come in and give us some reinforcements from down where the real law is made, and so we don't stray based on what really happens with the trial judge. But we're honored and thank her for coming to sit with us this morning. Counsel at the tables, I know are veterans of this, so you know the rules about the lights. I won't go into that, just to reiterate about staying in the mic nice and loud so that the tape picks you up really good because we use it as well. Beyond that, we'll call the first case, United States versus Oscar Vigil. Mr. Crooks.
May it please the court. Good morning. Tim Crooks for the appellant, Oscar Vigil. At issue in this case is whether Mr. Vigil's 2008 Louisiana conviction for sexual battery is a crime of violence under Guideline Section 2L1.2. That question turns on whether the sexual battery offense qualifies as sexual abuse of a minor, which is an enumerated offense under 2L1.2. We contend that it does not for three reasons. One of those reasons is foreclosed by this court's en banc decision in Cabecera-Rodriguez, so I'll turn to the other two reasons that are open for this panel to accept about why the prior conviction does not qualify, and I would note that if the court accepts either of these arguments, it would require remand for resentencing. Our first argument is that Louisiana sexual battery is not sexual, as that term is used in the phrase sexual abuse of a minor. This court's case law and other circuits' case law has held that the word sexual in the context of sexual abuse of a minor means that the perpetrator must act with the purpose or intent of sexual or libidinal gratification, either of himself or of the victim. But the Louisiana courts have explicitly told us that the offense of sexual battery, at least this type that is consensual touching of a person under 15 with the perpetrator at least 3 years older, does not require proof of sexual gratification as an element. And that is the, we cited a Court of Appeals decision, State versus Taylor, which in turn cites the Louisiana Supreme Court's decision in State versus Schenck. Our second argument is that in addition to the fact that this offense is not by statutory definition and by construction by the Louisiana courts sexual, it's also not necessarily abuse because it encompasses consensual touching between young persons who are relatively close in age. And as Judge Haynes noted in her concurring opinion in Cabecera-Rodriguez, consensual touching by persons close in age is not abuse under the common understanding of that term. And again, we recognize that these terms are, under Cabecera-Rodriguez, defined as in the dictionary, but the authorities we're relying on from this court and from other courts did look to dictionaries to define those terms. Izaguirre Flores, Zavala Sustaita. And we note also that other courts have agreed with the point made by Judge Haynes in her concurring opinion, which is that consensual activity between persons close in age, young teenagers, is not necessarily abuse. Here, the statute, the Louisiana statute on its face, very plainly encompasses that type of conduct. As I mentioned, either one of these arguments would vitiate the 16-level crime of violence enhancement in this case. And for either of these two reasons, Mr. Vigil's conviction does not qualify as sexual abuse of a minor. The government has not argued that this error was harmless, and indeed, we don't believe that it could because the highest range under the guidelines that Mr. Vigil would be subject to in the absence of the 16-level enhancement would be 15 to 21 months. And that is way below the 41-month sentence he actually received. And so for these reasons, we would ask the court to vacate Mr. Vigil's sentence and remand for resentencing. And I did just want to point out, I checked the BOP inmate locator, And based on Mr. Vigil's date of entry into custody and his current release date, I calculate that he has spent almost, as of today, almost 21 months in custody, which would be the top of what we contend is the highest possible guideline range without the 16-level enhancement. So we would, again, ask that the court vacate and remand for resentencing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crooks. Ms. Wilson.
May it please the court. Under the plain meaning approach, Vigil's prior conviction for sexual battery constitutes a sexual abuse of a minor and is a crime of violence. The Louisiana statute satisfies the steps established in Rodriguez. Sexual battery under 1443.1 comports with this court's definition of both sex and sexual abuse because there's an intentional touching of a child's genitals. It's not careless horseplay, as Vigil argues. The sexual component is the gravamen of the offense, as the Louisiana courts have recognized. The punishments are severe precisely because of the sexual nature of this offense. In Rodriguez, this court recognized as much the wide variation of prohibited conduct, acknowledging the differences among states. Some states prohibit only physical contact, others punish a substantial range of non-physical acts. Some require a defendant to be physically present, but others do not punish others punish remote conduct. In this circuit, harm constituting abuse doesn't have to be physical in nature. A minor's unique status means that the harm can be psychological in nature and still constitute abuse. Indeed, psychological harm can occur even without contact and can be equally abusive, as this court recently said in Contreras. If indecent exposure without victim contact is enough to constitute sexual abuse of a minor, common sense dictates that committing a sexual battery upon a child's genitals under the Louisiana statute also constitutes sexual abuse of a minor under 2L1.2. This conclusion is sound. Sexual gratification or arousal is not the determinative factor. Indeed, a contrary view would remove rape and similar offenses from the realm of sexual abuse of a minor. This cannot be what the Sexual Sentencing Commission intended with this guideline. Judge Haynes' concurrence in Rodriguez focused mostly on how there was a need for the Sentencing Commission to define sexual abuse of a minor. Vigil's argument that this teenage hypothetical is simply a variation of this argument this court already foreclosed in Rodriguez. For example, an age differential requirement is not an element of a generic sexual abuse of a minor offense. This court recently rejected a comparable claim in Amaya, where the defendant argued a 14-year-old boy could be guilty of assault with the intent to commit sexual abuse under an Iowa statute if the boy committed any act that placed a 13-year-old girl just shy of her 14th birthday in immediate fear of an offensive physical contact. Amaya argued that it would not necessarily be abusive under the generic contemporary meaning of sexual abuse of a minor because of the closeness of age in the teenagers. This court was not persuaded by Amaya's implication that Iowa courts would interpret its statute more broadly because they could hypothetically convict a juvenile in such a situation. Instead, this court stated the focus on the minimum conduct criminalized by a state statute is not an invitation to apply legal imagination to the state offense, citing Moncrief. There must be a realistic probability, not a theoretical possibility, that a state would apply its statute to conduct that falls outside the generic definition of the crime. In other words, this court, when faced with similar facts, will not interpret a statute in a fashion that produces absurd results. Indeed, again, common sense dictates that teenagers close in age wouldn't be prosecuted in Iowa, Louisiana, Texas, elsewhere. But even assuming that they were and found guilty, the district court could remedy this situation, as Judge Morgan presumably appreciates. Any unfairness can be remedied in the court exercising its sentencing discretion to tailor the sentence to the individuals before them, just as 18 U.S.C. 1353A stresses. As this court recently reaffirmed in Amaya, it will not interpret a statute in a fashion that produces absurd results. This court should affirm, and unless the court has any additional questions, the government will yield the remainder of its time.
Part of the argument in the briefing was that there was insufficient information or evidence before the district court to ascertain I'm not sure whether the argument is that it was consensual or not, but essentially what the probation officer had wasn't detailed enough, sufficient enough. It wasn't argued in Mr. Crooks's main argument, but it's within the brief somewhere. So
about the minutes.
Yeah.
My understanding, which is borne out by the record, is the probation officer contacted the Louisiana courts and was told that a judgment was not available in this case. And it was also in the addendum. It was discussed during sentencing and the addendum. The district court specifically, as I recall, asked Vigil whether he wanted to investigate that further. Again, I'm not positive, but I believe that's what occurred in the sentencing, and he said nothing to that effect. And what was a little bit also interesting about this case is the minutes say that he was convicted as charged, something to that effect. And what he was actually charged with was between approximately June 1, 2006 and April 2007, the defendant intentionally touched the genitals of GM, a juvenile under the age of 15. And as was discussed in the briefing, the Louisiana statute has two components, meaning one is non-consensual and the other is consensual under the age, and the age disparity is under the age of 15. Now, we have under the age of 15 in the charging document, but what we do not have is that it was consensual. Now, we do have the PSR where we have more information, but of course, under this court's test, we're not able to consult that type of information. And it was discussed in the brief in conjunction with Vigil requesting a downward departure or variance, if you will, which the court denied. And the court's comments along the lines of, this was a 12-year-old girl who got pregnant. We had the age disparity was roughly 6 years. So they started having a relationship when she was 12 and he was 18. And then in 2007, when she was 13 and he was 19, that's when she got pregnant. And I believe the discussion, the focus on that was the downward departure or variance. They used both words, which the court denied. But the court also found the minutes to be adjudicative documents or adjudicative worthy document. And I did some research, of course, on this, and I see Judge Morgan could probably speak to this far better than I can, but many of the cases are peppered with discussions of minutes, but I also have seen a judgment. But I do know in this case we have the probation office representation that it could not obtain a judgment. And the minutes that were made available to the district court were in 2013. So, and the clerk of the court certified those minutes. So unless the court has any additional questions, the government requests
it. Does it matter if, I think in the analysis, if you can't determine which part of the statute that he was convicted under, that you look to which is the least culpable conduct?
That's correct, and that's...
So we have a way to deal with it, even if it's not certain in the record.
That's correct, and that's where I believe Mr. Vigil is also making his argument in terms of the closeness in age or the teenage argument that Judge Haynes mentioned in passing. But again, Judge Haynes, in that particular case, I believe in reading the decision, was concerned with how this, in her opinion, offense, or rather guideline, needs to be defined by the Sentencing Commission. And occasionally you will read cases where throughout the country where a judge maybe peppers part of an opinion with something along those lines. But again, the fact of the matter is that's not an element of sexual abuse of a minor, which essentially is a child, sex, and abuse. And again, we urge this court not to indulge, as it never has in this area, with some type of legal imagination decision, because that would essentially turn a lot of these decisions into a circus. And I did the research in Louisiana was such that I do the touching cases, if you will, are the type of sexual abuse cases that you would expect to find.
Is there a Fifth Circuit case that defines sexual abuse of a minor other than in the context of a particular state's law? I was looking at the Amaya case and wondering if there is a definition.
Well, I believe in the recent cases that came out this summer, Amaya, Contreras, as well as Elizondo, the court goes through the Rodriguez test, which actually were compatible with the earlier test of Zavalos and Izaguirre, where it goes through the legal definitions. And in those cases, the court talks about how in Blacks it's an illegal sex act, and Webster's sexual relates to associated with sex, and American Heritage, it's pertaining to affecting. And those cases go through all that, as well as Webster's taking unfair, undue advantage in relation to abuse or to use wrongly or improperly, which is an American Heritage definition. So my answer to that would be yes, the court has defined those, or at least given us a very good foundation to work from.
Thank you, Ms. Wilson. Back to you, Mr. Crooks.
To address the last question by Judge Morgan, this court has defined sexual abuse of a minor, and that's in the Izaguirre Flores case that I referenced. And the court held, we note that the 11th Circuit's definition of sexual abuse of a minor is equally applicable here. The phrase sexual abuse of a minor means a perpetrator's physical or non-physical misuse or maltreatment of a minor for a purpose associated with sexual gratification. So this court has already given content to both the word sexual and the word abuse. And this statute, as we contend, does not meet either one of those necessarily. Sexual gratification or arousal is not present here. The Louisiana Supreme Court has specifically said that is not an element of this particular offense. And I note that this Louisiana statute is unusual in my experience, and I have had clients with sexual abuse type convictions from all over the country, and it's rare, very rare, that a statute does not require as an element a purpose of sexual gratification or libidinal gratification. This statute is kind of an outlier in that sense. In fact, Louisiana has other statutes that do have that. In Schenck, the Louisiana Supreme Court contrasted indecent behavior with a juvenile, which does require the purpose of sexual gratification, with this, which does not. And we do think that that is a definitive construction of the statute by the Louisiana Supreme Court on that point. The abuse prong, I completely agree with counsel opposite that the abuse need not be physical. It can be psychological, but that begs the question that was flagged by Judge Haynes in her concurrence, which is when you have assented to conduct between people who are relatively close in age, teenagers maybe experimenting or exploring, that is not either physical or psychological mistreatment. That is just not abuse. And this statute does cover that.
Is there a Louisiana case that you found where the courts have applied the statute in this way?
I think the closest case to that particular scenario, and I'll supply the court with the cite, is State in the Interest of CM. And the facts of that case were that the victim was a 12-year-old girl, and she and a boy who was 15 and who he was just a little bit over 3 years older went into a shed and had consensual touching, kind of exploration type activity, and the statute was held to be properly applied to him. So that is an instance where you have people close in age engaging in consensual kind of exploration. But we do note, and I want to deal with this pretty thoroughly, because the government seems to be arguing Duenas-Alvarez, which is that there has to be a realistic probability, not just a theoretical possibility, that the statute will be applied in a way that is overbroad or covers non-covered conduct. Duenas-Alvarez does not govern, in addition to the fact that we have CM, Duenas-Alvarez does not govern for a couple of reasons. First, as the Ninth Circuit said in its en banc decisions in Grisel and Vidal, and as the Sixth Circuit has said in a case called Mendieta-Robles, which I'll 28J to the court, Duenas-Alvarez does not apply when the overbreadth of the statutory provision is plain from the text of the statute, and that is the case here. Second, Duenas-Alvarez does not apply when the state courts have held that the statute does encompass the non-qualifying conduct, even if there are no cases that actually present facts that would be the non-qualifying conduct. Again, we cite the Sixth Circuit's decision in Mendieta-Robles, also the Fourth Circuit's en banc decision in Aparicio Soria, which I'll 28J to the court as well. Both of those things are true here. The statute on its face clearly includes the non-qualifying conduct that is not abusive, and the Louisiana cases interpreting the statute confirm its overbreadth vis-a-vis the sexual aspect, because the courts have told us it does not require as an element proof of an intent to seek sexual or libidinal gratification. The government suggested that our interpretation would lead to absurd results, and we disagree with that. We think the court has drawn a firm line that is what is sexual abuse of a minor, and that the Louisiana statute here does fall without it, and district courts retain the discretion to sentence more highly based on the particular facts of the case under Application Note 7 to 2L1.2 or under their variance authority under 3553A if, in fact, they feel that a lower enhancement is underrepresentative of the seriousness of the prior. So, again, we would ask the court to vacate and remand.
Thank you, Mr. Crook.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wilson. Appreciate the briefing on both sides. We call